Thomas Jefferson. On the 13th of April, 1743, in a farmhouse among the mountains of central Virginia, a male child was born who was destined to stamp his genius and personality upon the future nation. The father was a backwoods surveyor of Welsh origin and a giant in stature and strength. His name was Peter Jefferson, and he called his boy Thomas. Peter Jefferson was the owner of 30 slaves and of a wheat and tobacco farm of nearly 2,000 acres. He was a stern man, though kind and just. One of his favorite maxims was, "Never ask another to do for you what you can do for yourself." He died when Thomas was but 14 years of age and was ever remembered by his son with pride and veneration. From the very first, young Thomas was an especially bright child. He inherited his mother's gentle, thoughtful disposition and her love for music and nature. He also took naturally to books and studious pursuits. He might have been over-studious, but his love of nature made him a keen hunter, a fine horseman, and as fond as Washington of outdoor sports. There were 10 children in the Jefferson home. Young Thomas was the third. He had a great affection for his elder sister, Jane. The two were always together in the home nest, and she did much toward elevating and ennobling his character. Her early death at the age of 25 was regretted by Jefferson to the end of his long life. Young Jefferson entered William and Mary College when he was 17. He was described as one of the gawkiest students of the session, but professors and students alike soon found out his worth. Dr. Small, the Scotch professor of mathematics, was particularly attracted to him and exercised a great and beneficial influence over his character. Among Jefferson's early companions was a jovial young fellow noted for mimicry, practical jokes, fiddling, and dancing. His name, like Jefferson's, has since been written indelibly upon the country's history. Every schoolboy and girl knows it. It was Patrick Henry. The two were boon companions in their youthful sports. Shortly after Jefferson entered college, Henry strolled into his room one day and delighted him with the news that he had been studying law since they parted and that he had come to Williamsburg to get a license to practice. Jefferson questioned him eagerly. When he found that the young man had in reality studied law only about 6 weeks, he was doubtful of the outcome. But needless to say, young Henry secured his license. Sometime afterward, when Jefferson was himself a law student and young Henry was a member of the House of Burgesses, which met at Williamsburg, matters between the king and the colonies were brought to a straitened pass by the issue of the Stamp Act. Henry felt at once that it was time to rebel and prepared his famous set of 5 resolutions and went to the Assembly Chamber, primed for the occasion. It is possible that he gave his young friend, whose guest he was, a hint of what he intended to do. At any rate, young Jefferson watched him intently. Suddenly, he saw his friend draw himself to his full height and sweep with a conqueror's gaze the entire audience before and about him. Then, in a voice rich and full and musical, he poured out his impassioned plea for the liberties of the people. In the midst of it, his voice suddenly rang out in electric tones. Caesar had his Brutus, Charles the First his Cromwell, and George the Third. He paused. The house was in an uproar. The speaker and many of the members were upon their feet, shouting, "Treason! Treason!" They thought he was going to threaten the overthrow of George the Third, who was King of England and of the colonies. But young Henry did not flinch. He looked the speaker squarely in the eye and with a superb gesture added in a tone which thrilled all hearers, "May profit by their example. If that be treason, make the most of it." Young Jefferson never forgot the scene. He listened enthusiastically to the heated debate which followed. The torrents of sublime eloquence which fell from the lips of Patrick Henry almost took his breath away, and a wellspring of patriotism bubbled into being in his strong young heart. He resolved that he, too, would strive to serve his country, and to this end redoubled his studious efforts, sometimes spending 15 hours a day over his books. The result was that he soon became the most accomplished scholar in America. He excelled in mathematics and was acquainted with 5 languages beside his own. But first and foremost, Jefferson was a farmer. He once said, "No occupation is so delightful to me as the culture of the earth, and no culture comparable to that of the garden." He celebrated the occasion of his coming of age by planting a beautiful avenue of trees near his house, which he had built upon a high hill and had given the name of Monticello, meaning Little Mountain. He delighted in trying new things and imported a large number of trees and shrubs to beautify his grounds, which were marvelous indeed. We are told that his interests were wide and intense, but in nothing, perhaps, did he display a more unfaltering zeal than in the cause of education. In his epitaph, which he wrote himself, Jefferson makes no mention of his having been governor of Virginia, minister to France, secretary of state, vice president, and president of the United States. Instead, there is a modest mention of the 3 things which he considered had won him the most enduring title to fame: that he was the author of the Declaration of Independence, of the Statute of Virginia for Religious Freedom, and father of the University of Virginia. All of these had freedom for their core. Free government, free faith, free thought, says Ellis in his biography. These were the treasures which Thomas Jefferson bequeathed to his country and his state, and who, it may well be asked, has ever left a nobler legacy to mankind? Jefferson was a member of the convention which met in Richmond in March 1775 to decide what part Virginia should take in the coming war. He fully endorsed the words of his friend, Henry, when that Demosthenes of the woods electrified his hearers with the thrilling cry, "Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war has actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it the gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." When Washington was elected commander-in-chief, Jefferson took the place which he vacated in Congress. He was at once recognized as an influential member. No one was better than he on committees. He was so prompt, frank, and decisive. Again, no one had a clear insight of the situation or understood his countrymen better. He was sagacious, wise, and prudent. By birth an aristocrat, but by nature a democrat. He cared very little for pomp and ceremony, and despised titles and the insignia of rank. He could not make a brilliant speech, but in his hand the pen waxed mightily indeed. Indeed, Jefferson is known to fame chiefly because of his authorship of that immortal document, the Declaration of Independence. In June 1776, he was appointed one of a committee of 5 to draw up such a document. The other members were Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Roger Sherman, and Robert R. Livingston. Providence must have decreed that the lot of writing it should fall to Jefferson, for no one else could have written it so eloquently, so inspiringly. The achievement was dear to his heart, for he directed that these lines be carved upon the granite obelisk at his grave: "Here lies buried Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence." Glory enough for one man. On New Year's Day 1772, Jefferson was married to Mrs. Martha Wales Skelton, a beautiful, childless young widow. Their life together was a most happy one. Jefferson was an ideal husband and father, and his wife was one of the truest wives with which any man was ever blessed of heaven. She died just after the close of the Revolution. 6 children were born to them, but only 2, Martha and Mary, lived to grow up. Jefferson looked at life through the lens of a philosopher. Here are 10 rules which he considered necessary for a practical life. 1. Never put off till tomorrow what you can do today. 2. Never trouble another for what you can do for yourself. 3. Never spend your money before you have it. 4. Never buy what you do not want because it is cheap. It will be dear to you. 5. Pride costs us more than hunger, thirst, or cold. 6. We never repent of having eaten too little. 7. Nothing is troublesome that we do willingly. 8. How much pain have cost us the evils which have never happened? 9. Take things always by their smooth handle. 10. When angry, count 10 before you speak. If very angry, 100. Needless to say, he followed these rules to the letter. Jefferson was known far and wide for his fairness and justice. He had hosts of friends everywhere, and he entertained them with such lavish hospitality that, in his old age, he was brought to the verge of want and had to mortgage his estate. Jefferson deplored slavery as a great moral and political evil. He once said, "I tremble for my country when I remember that God is just." He treated the slaves on his large estate so kindly that they almost worshipped him. It is said that when he returned from his 5 years' absence as minister to France, his Negroes were so overjoyed that they took him from the carriage and carried him into the house, laughing and crying, and otherwise expressing their joy because Massa done got home again. When Washington became president, he made Jefferson a member of his cabinet as Secretary of State. Here he collided with Alexander Hamilton, the Secretary of the Treasury. The two were exact opposites in many ways and could no more mix than oil and water. It required all of Washington's tact to keep peace between them. Each found the other so intolerable that he wished to resign that he might be freed from meeting him. At last, Jefferson could stand it no longer. He resigned in January 1794 and returned to his beloved farming at Monticello. 2 years later, he and John Adams were the candidates for the presidency. Adams received 71 votes and Jefferson 68. As the law then stood, this made him vice president. Adams was a Federalist, Jefferson a Republican. Therefore, it was not perhaps to be expected that they should agree. Mr. Adams, however, did not try. He simply ignored Jefferson in all political matters. At the next election, Jefferson and Adams were again the candidates for the presidency. Jefferson was elected. The quick-tempered Adams was so nettled over the affair that he arose at daybreak on the day of the inaugural and set out in his coach for Massachusetts, refusing to wait and see his successor installed in office. In later years, however, he repented of his foolishness. Jefferson and he became reconciled and kept up a friendly correspondence to the end of their lives. As president, Jefferson was much beloved. His inauguration was observed as a national holiday throughout the country. Of course, this was distasteful to Jefferson, who hated pomp and ceremony. A story is on record to the effect that he rode to the Capitol on horseback and hitched his horse to the fence while he went in, unattended, to take the oath of office. Whether it be true or not, we know that during his term of office, Jefferson frowned upon all display and would have no honors shown to him that might not have been offered to him as a citizen. Jefferson chose James Madison, his most intimate friend at that time, for his Secretary of State. Congenial men made up the remainder of the cabinet. This happy family worked together in peace and harmony throughout the 2 terms of Jefferson's presidency. Many important national events marked his administration. Chief of them all was the purchase of the Louisiana Territory from France in 1803 for $15 million. 11 entire states and parts of 4 others have since been carved from this vast domain. Jefferson retired forever from public life at the close of his 2nd term. From that time, says Daniel Webster, Mr. Jefferson lived as becomes a wise man. Surrounded by affectionate friends, his ardor in the pursuit of knowledge undiminished, with uncommon health and unbroken spirits, he was able to enjoy largely the rational pleasures of life and to partake of that public prosperity to which he had contributed so much. His kindness and hospitality, the charm of his conversation, the ease of his manners, and especially the full store of revolutionary incidents which he possessed and which he knew when and how to dispense, rendered his abode attractive in a high degree to his admiring countrymen. His high public and scientific character drew toward him every intelligent and educated traveler from abroad. The sage of Monticello died on the afternoon of July 4th, 1826. A few hours afterward, John Adams, too, breathed his last. Thus passed away, on the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, the two men who had been the most instrumental in bringing it about. Their country is their monument, its independence their epitaph.